Hello to everyone, and welcome to the teleclass, Patient's Experience of MRSA Screening, What Can We Learn? My name is Paul Weber, and on behalf of Professor Syed Zatar, the co-founder of this lecture series, I'd like to say how pleased we are that you have joined us today. As you can see on the title slide, Dr. Carol Pello is Senior Lecturer in Infection Control at King's College, and specifically at the very distinguished Florence Nightingale School of Nursing and Midwifery in London, England. Indeed, she is a very distinguished person herself. She has authored a great many articles and presented a great many conference lectures around the globe, and all to great acclaim. The one thing that she has not done before is give a teleclass lecture, and this despite being pestered to do so for almost a decade. I'm pleased to say that her resistance has worn down, and she has joined us to present this lecture. So, to present patients' experience of MRSA screening, what can we learn? I'm pleased to turn the metaphorical floor over to Dr. Carol Pello. Carol.
Hi, Paul. Thank you very much. And greetings from a very sunny London here. It's 6:30 in the evening here, and we're all holding our breath because if it rains today, it's St. Swithin's Day, which means we'll have rain for another 100 days. For many of you who come to London, you would probably not think that's anything unusual. But anyway, we're hoping it just stays dry for the last few hours remaining. I'm pleased to talk to you about this piece of research, which has been recently undertaken in London, and with the aim of actually improving a patient's experience of MRSA screening. If we go on to the next slide, certainly in the UK over the last 10 to 15 years, MRSA has had a huge impact and been a significant pathogen in our hospital settings. And we've had many nationally and locally launched initiatives to reduce the incidence with quite considerable success. And specifically, national guidelines have been designed for the management of and screening for MRSA. And since 2004, we set about having MRSA bacteremia rates set as targets for all our NHS hospitals. This year, we have a zero tolerance to MRSA bacteremias, which means that if any occur within our trust, then we are financially liable for it. So that's been a considerable change for us. However, since 2009, the Department of Health in England made it mandatory that we should screen most of our admission groups of patients on admission or prior to admission if they are planned electives, for example, surgery. And this has been a mandatory process. And during that time, we've kind of really assumed that patients did not object to this and were supportive of it. But interestingly enough, the Pathfinder study, which was set looking at patients' experience in Scotland, which reported in 2011, found there was considerable poor communication between staff and patients, and patients had quite a lot of misinformation about why they were being screened and what were the implications of it. So if we go on to the next slide, work within my own hospital at Guy's and St. Thomas's showed that, in fact, colonisation in the first year of universal admissions showed that we actually had quite a low colonisation rate of around 2%, and that was of testing 28,892 admissions. The range by clinical group varied from 0.8 to 6.6%, so we clearly had some hot spots within the hospital. And although the majority of the strains were healthcare associated, we were surprised to find that 18% of the strains were heterogeneous community associated strains and therefore may not have been associated with hospital contact at all. So this led us to believe that actually, universal screening for us in particular was a good thing. We also had within the various parts of the hospital anecdotal evidence of people refusing, which of course they're entitled to, but also mixed messages about how to decolonise properly and were people actually being adherent to the decolonization protocol. So next slide. The aim of this study was to learn about patients' experience of MRSA, and particularly their experience of MRSA screening process, and what it was like for them to be told that they were MRSA negative or positive, and if they were positive, how did they find the MRSA decolonization process, with a view to designing a much better patient experience as a result. Next slide. This study arose out of a call from the Department of Health Policy Research Programme, which wanted to investigate this following the Pathfinder study in Scotland. And so the infection prevention control teams at my own hospital, Guy's and St Thomas's Foundation Trust, and Lewisham University Hospital Trust, put together a bid to look at this together. And this is of interest because, in fact, Guy's and St Thomas's and Lewisham are geographically adjacent to one another, and we all serve diverse ethnic populations. We also are aware that because of the status of Guy's and St Thomas's, we have a lot of referrals from our other surrounding hospitals, so patients may actually have treatment at both hospitals, and we were aware that if protocols were different, that must also be quite confusing for patients. So that was something else we decided to have a look at. We were lucky to have two patient representatives on the study team whose role was specifically to bring the patient's point of view, but also to look at the materials to make sure that they were suitable for our general population. The study took place from July to December 2012, and the report was submitted to the Department of Health in April of this year, and we are about to submit to the Journal of Hospital Infection with our article of the study. There were two phases to this. The Department of Health, we wanted to do the two aspects at the same time, but the Department of Health asked us to do our patient interviews first, followed by a satisfaction survey. Next slide. So when we looked at the patient interviews, we decided that we would look for 10 patients in each hospital, two who were negative, three who were positive, and the rest were either people who had an MRSA history. The way the study worked out was that the IPC, the Infection Prevention Control Team, in both instances, are headed by the Deputy Director of Infection Prevention Control, and they were the local investigators for this study. They reviewed all the patient reports coming in of MRSA screening and identified patients who either had the two who either had negative reports or those particularly who had positive reports. They then made the first approach with a patient information sheet, looked at whether this patient was suitable, talked to them about it, and then if they were willing to take part, we then made an arrangement for me to go to that hospital and interview the patients. If you go on to the next slide, you'll see we managed to achieve our 20 interviews across the two trusts, 12 men and 8 women. We were surprised the age range went from 25 to 85, and in fact the average was 55, just over 55 years, which is actually quite unusual for us. But I have to confess here, we had two very young people in their late 20s, early 30s, who were admitted with community MRSA, massive boils over their bodies, and I think they actually kind of changed the profile of our interviewees. However, overall we had 4 who were negative, we had 9 patients who were new positive screens, and we had 7 who had a history of MRSA in the past, 4 of whom were positive on this occasion of admission. If we go on to the next slide, of course our patients are made up of two sorts, but the majority of them were emergency admissions through our emergency department. 6 were elective admissions, and 2 at Guy's St Thomas's were actually transferred from another hospital, which was not actually surprising. So the format of the interviews were recorded, And basically they were around, you know, did people know they'd been screened, how did they find it, etc. And here are just some of the findings with some of the quotes to put on. I was pleased to know that most knew about that they would be screened. So I'm just checking, I haven't jumped a slide here, but yeah, no, I haven't. So most knew in advance that they would be screened, and you will see from this one saying, well, I know I didn't, I knew I'd be screened, I don't mind. Another said, I was asked by the attending nurse to take a swab, and I was informed it's for MRSA. And G4 is actually from one of the young girl who came in with boils all over her. So I said, this is the first time that I've been properly swabbed and screened. So people knew about it. We asked them, did they actually, had they had any information beforehand? And there are leaflets available at both hospitals, which are specific to their trust about MRSA and why we screen for patients. In fact, it was interesting, the information leaflets had only been used at Lewisham, although, to be fair to guys in St. Thomas's, only two of our patients that I interviewed were elective, the others had all been emergency admissions. So here's somebody saying, yes, you know, you get the leaflet about what happens when you're coming into hospital, and in it, it does say that you will be screened for MRSA. The biggest shock, something we hadn't really thought about, is on the next slide, slide 11, which was that the four negative patients that we interviewed, none of them knew what their result was. And it became very clear when we asked around that routinely a negative result is not given to the patients. And here's this patient saying, no, I had to ask, you know, to tell me these things in advance, let me know the process. I'm sorry, a lot of these quotes you have to imagine with a sort of slightly London accent, so it probably looks rather odd over in Canada and elsewhere, that sometimes the grammar of everything, but if you imagine a Cockney accent, these actually make sense. You know, but this patient's saying, you know, just give me, give me reassurance, and let me know you'll give me the results as soon as they come back, so there's nothing to worry about, just to reassure me. So that threw up alarm bells for us already, and we looked at that further in our survey questionnaire. We then concentrated the rest of the analysis around the patients who were MRSA positive, and it was interesting even for them how unclear some information could be. Now, the G2 was a lady who had a history of MRSA, and she knew she'd be swabbed every time and was said, you know, it's inevitable, but if it is, it's always in my nose. And said, you know, but actually people just, nursing staff don't seem to realise that. They always look as if, you know, I'm covered in MRSA, and usually it's in a very specific area. And then there's this other patient saying, you know, well, didn't really know much about it, but was just told that they had something that needed treatment. So that led us on to saying, well, you know, if you found out about that, how did they get on with the decolonisation policy? Which in the UK consists of body washers, daily body washers, and application of Bacterin nasal cream. And it did seem that the patients who had been identified pre-admission, i.e. they had gone to a pre-surgical assessment and been found to be MRSA positive, went back to that assessment clinic, got their information. And this first person said, no, this was really very easy, and people had actually explained how to use it. Whereas the second one said, you know, it was a little bit more confusing, wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to do and how you put the cream in your nose. And this person was, the second person here, L6, was actually somebody who had been identified in hospital on admission. So, again, it shows that we often assume these things are quite straightforward for us as staff, but for the patient it's actually a new experience, and information can be a little bit overwhelming. All our patients, where possible, are put into isolation, and there were really very mixed views on isolation. The Lewisham Hospital is a brand new hospital, so their isolation facilities are really very pleasant, whereas in Guy's and St. Thomas's it really depends which end of the wing you're on, because we actually have a wonderful view, which this patient on the next slide 14, said she had of the Thames and the Houses of Parliament. It was almost like living in a hotel for her, because she just said, you know, there's a wonderful view of the river, glorious weather at the time, so, you know, who could complain? So, you know, she had the privacy and everything else. whereas the next patient on slide 15 was in isolation at the other end of the hospital, and he was in a very old part of the hospital where, in fact, it actually he couldn't see anything apart from sort of three walls when he sat in his bed. He couldn't even see out to, you know, what was happening in the ward unless he actually shuffled to the end of the bed and looked out. And he felt very isolated. This man had been one of the transfers from elsewhere. And clearly it's one of those things, you know, you have to ring if you want to actually see somebody. And his visitors were only there once a week at the weekend, so he spent a lot of time on his own. So we actually did something immediately as a result of that, because I was concerned that the patient was really quite isolated and distressed at not being able to see very much from his room. Some of our patients, though, are removed from isolation because we don't have that many side ward single rooms in our wards, and they may be cohorted on a bay or even isolated on a bay. And this is a man who'd actually, the next slide, slide 16, was a man who had been in isolation. We needed the bed, apparently, for another patient. So he was moved out into the ward, but then it sort of cohorted him in a corner of a four-bedded bay. And you'll see here, feeling quite distressed at the fact that round him are aprons and gloves, and people are behaving differently towards him than they are to the other three people in the bay. And as he says here, he says, not one of these people have spoken to me since I've been in here. So, you know, it's really bad. So that again flagged up things that we need as carers to take note of when patients are being nursed in a cohort, even if it's only a bed of four. So our initial analysis, when we looked, we transcribed all the interviews. The patient reps looked at all 20 interviews. The hospital's got their own 10. We met together to discuss our interim findings. And on slide 17, you'll see that these thoughts were that patients basically accepted that they would be screened. And they approved a screening, but there were clearly problems with communication, information and aspects of isolation. So those issues were actually used to construct the questionnaire that followed. Go on to the next slide. So we started our patient satisfaction survey in November to December of last year, and our target, we decided, was that we would try and get 300 at each hospital. From a variety of patients, anybody who would basically fill in, and we naively thought at one stage we'd do it all in a fortnight, that we'd ask, you know, just get people to fill in a questionnaire. It was 5 pages. Most of it was set yes, no, or opinion-type tick boxes, but there was a free text at the end for patients to write in comments that they might have. What we should have anticipated, of course, was our norovirus season started at the same time, which closed many of the areas that we would have used for the survey to anybody accessing it for such a, you know, for the study. So we extended it to the 21st of December, and guys in St Thomas had almost got it at 2773. Lewisham always knew they would struggle with just the manpower, but also with the norovirus, they only managed to get 140. However, this does make one of the biggest patient experience surveys, certainly in the UK. So as I say, patients could either self fill it in, or we would read the questions to them and fill it in for them, and then they have the opportunity to write stuff at the end. So we go on to slide 19 and see that 70% of our patients were over 45 years, 35 were over 65, and we had a mixture between 60% of our patients were white, 14.8% were black. Lewisham had more emergencies, and Guy's and St Thomas had slightly more electives, patients who were responding to this. We're not trying to pretend that this is in any way representative of the hospitals, but just to give you a picture of the makeup of this particular cohort. Next slide. The first question we asked them is to actually self-report their feelings, their knowledge of MRSA. And 42% said, well, they had a pretty good understanding of MRSA. Not surprisingly, with this age group, that nearly two-thirds of these people had been in hospital before, so presumably had been asked in the past about MRSA screening. But a fifth said they had a very poor knowledge, had no idea what it was, and 34% of patients had been MRSA positive in the past, but not necessarily this time. In fact, eight of our respondents in this survey were currently MRSA positive. We asked the patients, had they agreed to be screened, and you'll see on the next slide, slide 21, that 82% had agreed to be screened. We had six who said they had refused, but interestingly, 56 said they were never offered screening. Now, when we looked at those, we realised that they actually came from those who had been emergency admissions. And so it's quite likely that these were people who were too ill at the time. And some actually said to us, you know, I have no idea whether I was or not. There was so much happening in the emergency department. I could have been, I could have not. We actually checked back at our, because we run percentages each week on how many of our patients have been screened, and they're well over 95% in for the week that we were actually doing this study. So we feel that most of these patients just had no recollection rather than no offer. So over 90% of the elective patients had to be screened. Interestingly, over half were actually screened on admission. Now that could be if you were a pre-admission, you'd been to a pre-admission clinic. If you are over 18 weeks since your clinic, you have to be rescreened. But in talking to staff and presenting these studies, we actually think that on wards that are very busy, if somebody comes in, it's probably easier to rescreen them rather than have it flagged up on their electronic patient record that they've not been screened. So we think we're probably over-screening patients just as they come in through the door. So as we say, you'll see over half are screened on admission, and 40% of those had actually occurred in the week prior to us taking round the survey. Next. Now, the reason we then asked people, what we felt, and this was a tick box of things that they might want to do. And it was interesting that 98.3% said it felt it was the right thing that they wanted to do. And the second most common response was that they actually wanted to know if they had MRSA. It was something that was on their minds. However, 20 actually said they felt pressurised into being screened, and I'll come back to that later. But as this patient here says, I think it's one procedure that needs to be carried out in the hospital environment. As you come into contact with lots of other people, it's in the best interests of myself and others. Now, that was actually written by the patient at the end of their survey. This was not a recording, and I was quite impressed when I looked through the feedback on this, how many people had taken the trouble to make a comment that we've certainly taken notice of. If we go on to the next slide, I just want to look again a bit about who felt they'd been pressurised into testing. And it was interesting that our non-white patients were most likely to feel pressurised. That was statistically significant. And they were also less likely to feel that actually screening benefited them. These tended to be in the younger age group, and I'll come back to that again in a minute. But it was interesting that older patients were less likely to feel pressurised, or that even know that they could not refuse. Sorry, that should actually read the other way around. That they knew that they could refuse, but they didn't feel pressurised. Whereas the non-white young people felt pressurised and didn't realise that they could actually refuse the screening. So that's an area we have to look at in a wee bit. We asked people whether they had received information on screening, and we know, as I've said, leaflets are available at both trusts. And yet, two-thirds nearly said they had not received any information at all in advance of the screen. A minority had actually received a leaflet, but nearly half said they had no opportunity to ask questions. And I think this reflects some of the problems with staff who are busy. They know they've got to get the screen done, otherwise if the screen doesn't happen, they get an emergency alert on the patient's record and you can't proceed adding anything to records until they've actually sent that screen off, then I think people just go up and say, I'm taking your MRSA, you know, swabs, and that's it. So it's interesting that this patient here had actually written more information would be good to see a leaflet. I don't know what MRSA stands for. It's just a hospital illness. So clearly, you know, work required here. We then asked about who did this, who took the swabs. Now, in London, our procedure is that for all patients, they have a nose, throat and perineal swab. And at Guy's and St. Thomas's, it seems most commonly that the member of staff takes the nose and throat swab and then allows the patient to go and take their own perineal swab. Whereas at Lewisham, nearly two-thirds, over two-thirds, were actually taken by all three were taken by the healthcare worker. Patients, by and large, knew exactly where the swabs had been taken from. They didn't find that it had been painful, embarrassing, or uncomfortable on the whole. Of those who said that they did find it a problem, 9% said that it was the nose swab was by far the worst swab. Go on to the next slide. Again, hardly surprising when we've picked up on already on our interviews, but slide 26, 59% of our patients did not know what their result was and would like to have known it. A minority, 16%, said they didn't know and they didn't want to know either. 15% said they had been given the result, and 8 were MRSA positive and had undergone decolonisation or were currently undertaking it. And as this lady wrote, she said, what's the purpose of doing MRSA for patients if you don't let them know the result? So obviously feeling quite, annoyed about this. We asked at the very end of the screening what were their opinions on screening. Did they think it was the right thing? 98% said, yeah, absolutely, MRSA screening is the right policy. A similar number said they felt that it actually benefited patients. And a similar number again said they felt that screening would actually help reduce infections within hospitals. Interestingly, women were more worried than men about contracting MRSA in hospital, and black patients were more likely to feel positive people could be discriminated against once their result was known. So again, I think that links back to this business about being pressurised and feeling they were being pressurised and not realising that they could refuse. If we go on to the next slide, slide 28, black patients were also those who had the least knowledge or little knowledge about it, and were more likely to agree that screening could be upsetting. And this group were particularly the 16 to 29 year olds who had the most negative views. And I think this throws up that maybe for these young people coming into hospital, maybe this is their first time and therefore more scary than for older people who may have had more than one experience of coming in and out of hospital. Overall, we asked if people were MRSA positive, would they like their own room? Yes, of course, 87% said yes, they'd love their own room. But of course, in the UK, most of our wards are not single rooms. They're actually bays of, you know, 4 or 6 patients. Go on to the next slide. Slide 29. Very vociferously, this male patient has written, I think all patients should be screened if they're coming into hospital, and if they refuse, then their admission should be refused. I don't think that's a policy we could actually pursue, but I think it's a clear indication of how strongly people feel about the importance of MRSA in hospitals and what we should be doing about it. And this other gentleman has written, I think NHS staff would not discriminate against patients with MRSA, but other patients may do. So, and maybe that is actually borne out by the patient who was who had been cohorted, who nobody had spoken to before. So we've gone to slide 30. There was a small bit at the end for patients who were MRSA positive, just to fill in about their experiences of and decolonisation treatment. You'll see there were 8 patients in total, only one woman. 4 had been identified electively and so had been decolonised prior to coming into hospital. But there again, five out of them said, you know, there's no opportunity to ask questions. But those who'd been treated at home prior to admission said they felt they had, they said, you know, they'd found the treatment quite straightforward and had had the least problems of all. In hospital, it was quite interesting. We then asked patients, did they feel that that they were looked after properly and they had confidence in the staff? And all said that they had confidence in the staff to manage MRSA and found that there was a consistent approach. So that kind of was comforting for us to know that patients actually were being all treated the same and that they felt that their treatment had been actually appropriate. So if you go on to the next slide, slide 31, it's interesting this, that patients clearly approve and are supportive of screening. Knowledge about MRSA seems to be associated with previous admissions, whereas refusals are associated with self-reported poor knowledge about the subject of MRSA. As I say, a significant number didn't recall ever being screened, but looking back, most of the, those tended to be from those who'd come in as emergency admissions through our emergency department. But in particular, I think we have to look at the younger and black and Asian patients who are most likely to feel pressurised into screening and feel as if this, you know, the information that they've been given is inappropriate or lack of no information at all. So slide 32 shows that, you know, we have, despite the leaflets, a dearth of information, patients reporting, very much like the Pathfinder study found. And we also find that, that people are not being having the opportunity to ask the questions they would like to. In our discussions, it's quite clear that people need more than a leaflet, and maybe we need more than one type of leaflet in order to feel that patients are knowingly signing up for something that they agree with. And in particular, we need to target the young and ethnic groups to make sure that we've given them something appropriate. And somebody has actually suggested forgetting about leaflets, but why not think about making an app for their iPhones that might be, or a talking heads or something that might be more appropriate for them. So that is still in discussion with us. The other question we had to raise was that if patients don't have enough, feel they don't have enough information, but we're asking them in some instances to take their own swabs, are we sure they're taking them properly? And to me, that's much more worrying, because otherwise we're spending a lot of money. I think it's about £12 for a screen in the UK. We're asking them, you know, to take swabs that are expensive, and if they're not taking them from the right areas, we could actually be wasting our time. But I think most important of all is this need to really go back to staff and say, you know, I know you think that screening is a standard thing we do, but for the patients it is a unique experience for many and can be very frightening, and we need to bear in mind that this isn't something that happens every day to them, and we need to take more care about how we approach the subject and how we get back, you know, back information to them. And particularly this business about if people, we need to ask at the time of making the subs, do they actually want to know, or to tell them if you don't hear something in 48 hours, then there is no need. Then, you know, you can assume that you're MRSA negative because our results are all back and verified within 48 hours. So that's something, you know, we are yet to address. So there are limitations to this. It is just one geographical area, and it's one geographical area of London, which may not be typical elsewhere. We had hoped to have a third trust join us, who at the 11th hour, unfortunately, just didn't have the manpower to sign up, which, so we weren't as big a study as we'd hoped. And, of course, our target of 600 questionnaires was not actually met. However, as I say, this is the largest survey that's been undertaken in the UK on patients' experience. And the next thing that was really left was when we look at, there were some elements of the questionnaire, as I say, it was five sides of A4, most of it tick box, so you know, one would have thought you could do it quite quickly, and certainly for those of us who had to, you know, write these, read these out to patients who hadn't got their glasses or didn't have a pen or whatever, you know, it didn't seem an awful lot. But in fact, you know, there were elements that weren't completed properly, and particularly when we got down to looking at opinions, people often just ticked it's the right thing to do and never went further. So I think we also have to bear in mind that the questionnaire maybe could have been easier or shorter, but also to bear in mind that when developing questionnaires, how sick patients are. And it really struck me going around the wards, really how very ill our patients are, that there is very little time when they are, you know, reasonably well in order to help participate in a survey like this. So we do have to bear in mind that we are dealing with an ill population who perhaps even five sides of paper is too much to ask. So the next question is, what do we do now? Well, or the South London group, actually, so greater than Lewisham and Guy's and Zach Thomas's, are meeting to look at common pathways, because we are aware, as I say, of our patients. We're often sharing patients between specialities and because of the geographical area. So we're looking at, but the first thing we've decided, and we have actually now written and agreed the format of an MRSA a new MRSA information sheet, which does include the instructions that a negative, if you don't hear anything, you can assume that within 48 hours you can assume that you're MRSA negative, but you may ask and to put the onus on them, because of the number of screens that we're doing, we couldn't guarantee we'd get everybody back a result regardless. So the advantage of that, it will now go through all the trust communications department and be headed appropriately. But the good thing about that is the information is then common across the whole of the South London area. We're now going to start working on an MRSA treatment leaflet, so we will be consistent then in the messages about decolonisation, whether it's in hospital or at home. We also picked up that some patients in hospital were not being decolonised correctly. We use like a Hibiscrub body wash, which you have to apply neat to the skin, whereas we found that some people were actually adding it to the bowl of water the patient was washing in. So we've had to look again at our in-service on decolonisation to make sure people are actually instructing patients correctly. And at Guy's and St Thomas, we've just made this very pictorial sheet for the wards so that they can actually be reminded of how to decolonise correctly. And we have presented this information at all our trusts, and we'll do so at our National Infection Prevention Society conference in September. And our patient reps are taking this to their service users research forum conference, where they will present that too. So it's been interesting in terms of doing research. It's never as easy as you think it's going to be. You think it's all going to be plain sailing, and there's all something that will cause hiccups. However, in my final slide, I would actually like to thank the study team, Debbie Flaxman, David Tucker, Barbie Sampat, Lorraine Mooney, Muriel Sprott, Anne Russell, Jonathan Edgeworth, and Olga Tosas, for their help in actually doing this. I'm also very grateful to the patients who gave us time to be interviewed, and the patients who took the trouble to fill in the questionnaire, and also the ward staff who enabled us to actually contact these patients in the first place. Thank you. And now I'll pass you back to Paul.
Carol, thank you very much. I see that you've left your email address on slide number 35. So if people have questions, I presume that it's okay for them to contact you directly?
Yes, of course.
Although I gather they should do that relatively quickly, because you're going to be retiring from that email address.
Yes, but
by the end of July.
Yes, I'm afraid my time has come to an end.
Hey, listen, I have a little question for you. What role did the media have in telling the community about MRSA? Has that been top of mind in the news media?
Well, interesting. One of the questions we had was, do people worry about MRSA coming into hospital? And that was only an issue for women, but the majority of patients said they weren't that worried. I think, I mean, the media has played a big part in people's fears and understanding or misunderstanding around MRSA. And But of course, it depends on what the next difficult, thing is coming in. We have a lot of trouble with norovirus and C. difficile at the moment, so probably most patients are more worried about coming in and catching C. difficile than MRSA. So I think they're aware. I mean, certainly if you went back into the early 2000s, people were terrified of coming into hospital for fear of MRSA. But I think now with the screening and the fact that they are aware about the targets that were set, and the fact now, I don't know if they know now that it's a zero tolerance, you know, they are much more assured about coming into hospital.
Your screening program wasn't specifically mentioned in the media, so they weren't aware of that until they came into the hospital then.
No, that's right. But they were certainly aware, before that MRSA was a huge problem. I would say between sort of up around sort of 2004, it was very much in the public media, and is less so now.
Right. Well, that's good. It's a very interesting survey. Your results were interesting, even though you say that that your survey target was not met. I think what you list in What Now is very telling, including making the negative results known. Because I think people often find that they just don't hear, in the case of their GP, if they go and have a test for something and they hear nothing, they don't know if no news is good news or if they've just been forgotten. I think it's very important to include that negative result.
Absolutely.
And of course,
we have this in lots of areas in England, because if you have a cervical screen, you won't get a... You're not told you have a negative result. You're just told if you have a positive result. So, like you say, you're often wondering, have they lost the report, or has somebody seen it and, you know, misfiled it or whatever? So I think it is important. And particularly, you know, if we're doing 28,000, you know, in the space of one hospital in 1 year, we can't guarantee we'll give everybody back. I mean, that would have been the other option, to say we will make sure everybody knows that they're negative, and it just isn't realistic. But I think, you know, everybody seems quite happy with the information sheet we've given, which says, you know, if you don't hear within 48 hours, then please, you know, assume, but ask if you're still worried.
Well, again, thank you very much for this. It's, I think, very important what you've done, and it will lead undoubtedly to more studies along the same lines. And looking forward to hearing more about those, probably not by you, though, I gather, right?
Well, I'll still be around doing bits and pieces, but yes, hopefully I think it's time to pass on the torch to somebody else.
On the very last slide, I've noted our patron sponsors, Virox Technologies and the World Health Organization. To both of them, I will again say thank you very much for their support. And Carol, thank you again very much. It was a very interesting topic, I think a very important teleclass. And even though you made me wait for 10 years for it, I'm glad that we did it. And thank you very much.
Not at all. Thank you.
To the rest of our audience, thank you. And we will talk to you again very soon. Goodbye.
Goodbye.